Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 46 of the Mangalog Podcast. My name is John, and this week's episode is going to be on Love Hina. And this is jumping back onto the shonen side of things after doing some seinen series last week, or last time was The Drops of God. But now we're focusing on Love Hina, which can be any more different than Drops of God. But this is a harem rom-com series written and illustrated by Ken Akamatsu. He is a manga artist from Tokyo who originally had success with a series called AI Love You, which published from 1994 to 1987. 1994, that's the year I was born. And after having success with that series, he wrote Love Hina from 1998 to 2001. Wrote and illustrated, of course. And his longest work to date has been Negima from 2003 to 2012. His current serial is UQ Holder, which is a sequel to Negima. And this is a cool, interesting little tidbit I found on his Wikipedia page, but he's also the creator of a website formerly known as J-Komi. It's a Japan-only service that launched in 2011, and it's now known as Manga Z. But basically, it distributes out-of-print manga and doujinshi, and it does so as, you know, distributes them as DRM-free ebooks with the permission of the original authors. And it's supported by advertising, or supported through advertising. So I thought it was a cool little factoid about Akamatsu. Not only is he a manga artist, but he's also maintaining this free manga reading service online. And as for Love Hina, it is actually considered the origin of harem manga and anime, especially romantic comedy, which I thought, you know, this series, it's from the 90s, but I had just assumed, you know, harem manga and anime existed way before Love Hina. But I guess depending on who you ask, Love Hina seems to be the catalyst for, you know, maybe its success was the catalyst for all these, you know, the follow-up harem manga and anime. So yeah, for those of you that despise harem manga, I guess you can blame Akamatsu. Yeah, I just didn't realize how popular Love Hina was, or how influential it was to this genre until I started looking up information on it for the podcast. So I'm actually kind of happy I just happened to pick this really super influential manga on a whim. But yeah, it was originally published in Kodansha's Weekly Shonen Magazine, and again, it had been running from October 1998 to 2001. It's a relatively short period of time. But yeah, of course, Kodansha is Shonen Magazine. It's a Shonen magazine. I originally brought it up in my Eden Zero episode, and To Your Eternity was another one. Yeah, the series is 14 volumes long. It's actually been collected into 5 omnibuses here in the States. In English, and you can actually buy those omnibuses, print versions of them, for like $20 a pop, or you could do the Kindle Unlimited subscription, which I think has all of the omnibuses available. You could also buy them digitally at like $14 each, or you can do what I did and not spend any money. Well, that's not true, but I have a Mangamo subscription, $5 a month. And Mangamo has the first 6 volumes of the series / 51 chapters, and that would be 2 of the 5 omnibuses. So you get a good chunk of the series if you're subscribed to Mangamo, and it's just a good way to, you know, I think Mangamo, despite not having like a series available in full, it's a great way to start series, see if you might like them, and if you do, continue on what Mangamo has available. And then just buy the rest if you're really interested in finishing it. So yeah, Love Hina is one of the series available, so that's how I started it. And it makes for good material for the podcast, because then I don't have to go out and buy extra manga. But yeah, there's an anime adaptation of Love Hina. It's 24 episodes. It was produced by Zebek, which is a division of Production IG, which is known for doing stuff like Haikyuu, and like To Love Ru. Zebek's done Pandora Hearts, Keijo, Shaman King, the Space Battleship Yamato anime remake, a bunch of stuff. And the series originally aired on TV Tokyo April 19th through September 27th of the year 2000. So before the manga ended, and I don't know if it ever got, I don't think it got another season. But yeah, it's a rom-com, as previously mentioned. It has a little bit of ecchi, fan service-y stuff. To be honest, this is stepping out of my comfort zone. I'm sure I mentioned this before when I did what was the last harem series I did? We Never Learn, I think. I think that was probably the last ecchi, and then before that was Eden Zero. So, and I wasn't really a huge fan of Eden Zero. We Never Learned, I think I liked it a little bit more, but yeah, it's not my not really my genre. Part of this podcast is not just reading stuff that I know I'll like. I try to cover just a variety of things, because there's good stuff in any genre or demographic. And even if I don't like something, I know a listener will probably latch onto it based on how I talk about it. So I try to be, I try don't I try not to, I you know, you guys will know my taste based on how I talk about things, but I try not to bash a series if I know, hey, you know what, maybe the, you know, even if I say, okay, I didn't really like this and this about a series, but if you like this and this, you're probably gonna like this, or I could see how somebody could like this. That's, I try to keep that perspective. By the way, I don't remember if I ever made an update on the podcast, but there was a listener recommendation on Inuyashiki, and I remember going into that saying, oh, a lot of people say it gets, it might get worse, it might get a little wacky, but I actually ended up finishing Inuyashiki, and I can't remember if I already mentioned this, but I did end up enjoying that manga. I thought it was solid. So update on Inuyashiki. It's rare that I give updates on manga that I finish. And usually when I introduce a manga series on the podcast, I haven't finished it. I've only read the first few volumes. But Inuyashiki, I did go back to, because I think I ended up getting the rest of the series through a Humble Bundle and finishing that. I think Kodansha's had five Humble Bundles at this point. And I've bought all of them. So I have a lot of manga, and some of them are completed, maybe half of the series they put out through those things are completed. So yeah, Inuyashiki was one of them. Anyways, that goes to say that even, again, if I just listen to what I hear about online, Inuyashiki gets really bad, then I would never finish, I would never try out something. But I'm glad I finished Inuyashiki. I think it was solid. But yeah, that was my whole rant about, stepping out of my comfort zone reading manga that I necessarily wouldn't like. But yeah. And we'll get to what I liked and didn't like about this one. So my impressions of the series. Well, let's get into a synopsis, really. So we have this character, Keitaro Urashima. He is 19 years old, single. He gets kicked out of his parents' home after failing more than once to get into a college that he wanted to go into. It's a prestigious Tokyo University. It's one of the top colleges in Japan, and he ends up, with nowhere left to really go, instead of being homeless or, I don't know, getting a job and living in a crappy small apartment, he ends up going to his grandmother. He knows his grandmother owns an inn. He figures he can just bunker down there so that he could really focus on his studies again and try again on during his next entrance exams for the Tokyo University. So he's pretty bad at school. Not gonna lie, he's pretty hopeless, actually. But he's very determined. And like in typical Shonen fashion, you've got your extra determined protagonist who isn't necessarily skilled or has any reason to be as confident as he does, but he tries. And that's what matters. So he really wants to, part of the reason why he wants to get into this Tokyo University is he wants, to boost his image, since he's a nobody, he's not really good at anything. And he figures maybe, getting accepted in this university will really turn things around for him. And I can get behind that part. Of course, there's where it kind of becomes a little unrealistic. There's the whole cliche, which maybe at the time this wasn't cliche, but the whole childhood promise he made to a girl that he met at like a playground or something. They made a friend, or they made a promise to both apply to Tokyo University, which is like a weird thing for a little kid to be worrying about. Now that I think about it, you guys are kids. Why are you worried about college? You're not even in elementary school. But anyways, again, maybe this wasn't a cliche. I don't know. So that's his other motivation. Actually, that's his main motivation. I can get behind trying to, trying to improve your image or whatever. But yeah, the whole childhood promise thing, not so much. Anyway, he goes to his grandma's inn. Turns out his grandma bounced. She's gone. I think his aunt's there. She's watching over the inn. But the inn has been turned into an all-girls dormitory. So the grandma left on vacation, traveled the world. And I don't know who decided to turn this into a dorm, but whatever. Again, this is just set up because we got to have an all-girls dorm because it's a harem. But, you know, I wasn't too bothered by it. I mean, it's like, oh, that's very convenient. Okay, he's going to be bunking in this all-girls dormitory, you know, free of charge. And, of course, you know, he discovers that he didn't know at first that this was had been turned into a dorm. So, of course, he discovers that this is a girl's dormitory through a series of classic, I assume classic, harem misunderstandings, you know, walking in on somebody in the bath or whatever. So it didn't bother me, I think, because, again, I came in with expectations. So it didn't bother me. Granted, I didn't find the tropes funny at all. I never do. But I didn't find myself being, like, offended by them either. So and this tropey stuff kind of continues throughout the first omnibus. But I thought it was harmless. You know, I thought it was harmless enough. I wasn't offended by it. And in terms of fan service, the series really isn't as, like, in your face about it. I mean, there's definitely scenes, but, like, it's not as honestly, I was expecting it to be a little more fan servicey compared to some of the recent fan servicey stuff I've engaged with. Actually, the Keijo I mentioned earlier by Studio Zebek, that was just ridiculous to the top, where it was just like, that was hilarious how overtly sexual that series was. But even, like, We Never Learn, or, like, oh, Fire Force, that's a really bad example of just, like, fan service that makes no sense and is, like, actively detrimental to the story, to my overall enjoyment of a story. Fire Force really just screws that up pretty bad. But here it's, like, nowhere near that level, at least in my opinion. But yeah, so there's, like, this drama in the first chapters or so, where whether, like, you know, Keitaro is gonna actually be able to stay at this dorm, because he's left a really bad first impression on these girls, and, you know, he's not, it's a girl's dorm, you shouldn't be allowed to stay, right? So there's a little bit of drama, but of course this is the setup chapter, you know, so it gets resolved pretty quickly. And I wouldn't really count it as a major spoiler, but he does end up getting to stay. Essentially the excuse is that his grandma makes him the manager of the inn. She's like, she left instructions to the aunt. I guess she assumed Keitaro would eventually find his way there. And he becomes the manager in her absence. So now the girls can't argue about, you know, or object to him staying. And, you know, so the story really so far just follows him doing his studies while managing the inn. And, you know, it's the managing the inn part is kind of front loaded. It just boils down to him just doing his studies and then having a variety of experiences with the girls there. Lots of, you know, again, the classic misunderstanding where he accidentally peeps on a girl in some convoluted way, though again not the worst I've seen. But really I think the bread and butter of these types of series is just the likability of the characters, namely the girls, because usually the protagonist in this situation is kind of a blank slate. Like, he's a likable dude. I guess it depends on the series. You know, sometimes they could be skeevy, sometimes they could be like, okay, I can see how somebody would fall for him. I can't see how, like, six girls can fall for him at the same time, but I can see how a girl might find certain aspects of his personality charming or cute, or, you know, like, oh, he's trying so hard, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I can see. So Keitaro, he's seems like he's a likable dude, but, like, the girls in general, I think they're all pretty likable. One of them is a classic tsundere, and, you know, I don't really care for that trope as much, but I gotta say she kind of won me over, you know, like, you kind of don't like her at first because she's, like, really physical with him, with the protagonist Keitaro, but you start to like her. Anyways, I'm kind of getting on a tangent, but yeah, lots of tropey misunderstandings. At some point, it's funny actually, because these tropey things happen, but the characters are kind of like self-aware, and so they acknowledge, you know, like Keitaro, he's like always bumping into the one girl, and I'm forgetting her name. Oh my gosh, why am I forgetting her name? But she's always bumping into like the main girl, who I thought was okay. Her name must be Hina, you know, but it's not. It's not Hina. I was like, wait, I forgot what Hina, why it's called Love Hina. But anyways, like he's always bumping into her, and at some point she's like, man, you always are bumping into me at the worst times, and they kind of like share a laugh about it. So like, it's clearly acknowledged that just like the ridiculousness of what's going on at any given time. So it's kind of funny how they're self-aware about it. I like that part of the series. But just because the girls are aware that this stuff is happening doesn't mean they're going to, you know, it stops happening. And, you know, it's with this girl, God, I really wish I knew her name. I thought I wrote it down in my notes. Hold on. It's going to bother me. Why didn't I write her name down? Oh, my gosh. Anyways, main girl, the Asuka looking one, I guess, with that hair color, the older looking one, she's definitely it's obvious they're setting her up as like the main love interest, and but it's weird. I expected there to be this like back and forth of like you know, characters not expressing the way they feel about someone, or like, you know, that kind of thing where it's like they just kind of hold it in. You're like, man, I wish these characters would just talk. Love Hina, they actually talk, which was like surprising to me. I was like, okay, I was like, this is like, you know, this is the series that really set off the harem genre, so I assume it's just going to be surface level, like, you know, it's not going to like subvert. It's not going to subvert the genre in any way because it's establishing the genre, right? So I'm like there's no way that these characters are actually talking about their feelings right now. Like, there's just no way, but they do. And it was like, it was kind of surprising. But yeah, that's part of the reason why I like these characters so much too, is that like they talk to each other. They like communicate their feelings. You know, they're like I said, there's still like moments where a character will just like get flustered and run off and not want to talk to the main character or whatever. But like things are resolved. They're resolved rather quickly. They're not stretched out for the sake of drama for too long, you know? So I actually really, really enjoyed that. I'm trying to think. Yeah, so you've got like you've got, I guess I should actually describe the girls that are there. I think there's four or five. So there's the main tsundere girl. There's the kendo girl. She's into kendo. She always wears her uniform. She tries to kill Keitaro on multiple occasions. I mean, it's kind of a joke, a running gag, where she's like bringing up her blade to his throat because he's doing something perverted or thinking something perverted, or she just assumes he's doing whatever. She's kind of simple. She is obviously very inexperienced with boys, it seems like, so like him being around makes her feel certain types of ways that she's never felt before, you know, that sort of thing. But she refuses to acknowledge those feelings, and it just makes her flustered. There's actually there is some decent comedy here. There's actually a scene where she like challenges him to like a kendo match or duel or whatever, and then like they're in the bath, and she just challenges him on the spot, and he's like in his towel, I think, and like all of a sudden he just finds himself with a, you know, with a wooden stick in hand or whatever, and he's like, what am I doing here? He's like, why is this happening to me? And like she goes to like strike him, and he dodges, but like she hits like a boulder next to him, and it just explodes, and he's like, somebody please save me. It's just like, that part actually got me. There's some really good moments that are actually funny. But yeah, so you've got her, you've got like the foreign girl, I think she's from India, question mark. She says she's not. I don't know where she's from. Her name's Koala or something. I don't know. She's just kind of like ditzy. She's very perceptive. She's also kind of just like in your face, that kind of, and she's really hyper, kind of a handful. And she makes for some fun moments, I guess. And then there's like the senpai figure. She's, you know, I think she's about the same age as Keitaro, maybe a year older than him. She's more older, you know, more, I mean, obviously she's more mature from the girls. She definitely likes to toy with Keitaro. I don't know how I feel about her. She kind of has like that She's got like the slanted eyes. Her name's like Kitsune or something, so it's like reference of fox. But she's cool. You've got the younger girl of the group. I wouldn't call her like the loli because she's not like older and looks younger. She's just young. That's for kind of some of the scheming. I mean, they're what's the word? Tasteful about the treatment of her. Like she's not. When it comes to the, you know, the fan service-y aspects of the series, I mean, they try to leave her out of it, thankfully. Again, this is not like, it doesn't seem like a lot of the fan service is drawn, unless it's like one of the older girls, it doesn't seem like it's drawn for like, you know, titillation or anything like that. I as tasteful as you can be about this type of stuff, I feel like I've seen worse. Again, I'm not too, I wasn't too offended by like, you know, how he portrays some of these characters. But yeah, there's a younger girl. You know, they've got their own like issues and stuff too, which is I like. You know, there's more to their character than just being there as a love interest to the protagonist, of course. But you've got the 12-year-old, I forgot what her name was, but she's like been, you know, when we're introduced to her, she's kind of dispirited. She's trying to study and also she dreams of getting into Tokyo University at a young age. She's already, you know, focused on that kind of thing. And excuse my dog barking in the background. But she's already focused on trying to prepare for college and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. And Keitaro having the same aspirations is able to kind of like bond with her on that fact. So you've got the young girl, you've got the tsundere, you've got the kendo, you've got the foreigner, you've got the older senpai figure. And then there's like Keitaro's aunt, which she only pops up every once in a while. I don't know what her deal is yet. She's kind of still surrounded by mystery. I've only read the first technically three volumes, so the first omnibus. I think the next omnibus gets into his aunt, so I don't know. But yeah, they're just fun characters, man. I don't know. I like the vibes I was getting from this series. It just felt like when I was watching I think the anime, the first harem anime I watched, and it was technically a reverse harem, was Oren High School Host Club. And I felt like I got similar vibes. It's just like this comforting, just like, just fun characters. And, you know, there's some with some problematic aspects, like any, especially older series has. But if you look at it from like a critical lens, there's obvious problems you're going to find. Like, but with any series, really. But I was just vibing. I enjoyed these characters. I enjoyed, like, it was harmless. It just felt harmless to me. I'm sure it's something somebody on the internet will get worked up about, you know, if they're like, you know, I don't like the way they did this. This is sexist. This is, you know, whatever. not to discredit those people. I mean, there's obvious, I'm sure, again, I've become kind of like desensitized, I guess, at this point. So like especially coming in with the expectations that this is a harem series, I'm not trying to discredit the people that have those criticisms of series like this, but I'm just saying if you're gonna come in with that type of mindset, then you're gonna find problems here and you're not gonna like this series. I'm just gonna, you know, put that out there, you know. So I'm speaking positively on it, but I want anybody to go into this expecting something different. I do wonder what these girls are doing here, to be honest. Like, I know one's studying, the other one is also studying, she's going to school. But there's like the foreigner girl, I'm not sure what her deal is. The kendo chick, she's all, I mean, I think they're all technically in school. It's kind of, I don't know if this is a normal thing, but like, do parents just let their younger kids live off in a dorm somewhere while they, you know, attend school? Is that a thing? Maybe parents are too busy. I didn't really look into this too much. I don't know if it's just, maybe I'm thinking too hard about it, but I'm just like, why are these girls here? They're all relatively young and they're just kind of like in a dorm, with no, like parental guidance or like older guardian figure, except for the aunt, I guess. That was, you know, if you think too hard about these things, you start to, you know, start picking, you know, poking holes in it. But again, let me see. As a comedy, like I said, there were some, excuse me, like I said, there were some standout moments. But overall, I mean, I guess I didn't find it super funny. There's just moments that I think are kind of over the top and silly, when he gets hit by one of the girls, he'll just I think there's a scene where he gets launched off of a balcony, which I thought was just so over the top, but I actually kind of laughed. And then there was a part where I think he got hit on a bus, and then the bus lets him off at a stop, and he's just he falls, or no, it was a train, I think, and he just falls onto the pavement. He's just bleeding profusely. So some of that stuff is pretty funny. I think Keitaro as a main character, he's very sensitive, but he's also, he's kind of a wimp, and he's definitely a pushover. So a lot of the humor is just derived from him having just really just rough days. And of course, there's a lot of misunderstandings, but he's definitely a little pervy. But the thoughts that it was going through his head seemed realistic for the type of person he was. He wasn't going out of his way to be actively predatory, I guess. But he also says and thinks some objectionable things that I think are just normal teenage guy stuff. So he's not he, I don't think he's complete scum. But as far as him protagonist goes, I think he's passable. Again, I wasn't like I mean I was like man I wasn't like I hate this guy, why do I have to follow this complete, idiot, this complete scumbag, that kind of thing. No, I think he was fine. This is one of those characters where I was like, I can see how somebody would fall in love with this guy, I guess. He's trying really hard. He's a wimp, but he's got he's thoughtful. He's sensitive. I mean, it's kind of standard fare, I guess, when it comes to okay, let's make a semi-charming, lead character, or isekai protagonist. He's got to have just these specific qualities, and then the rest of him's just a blank slate, that kind of thing. He's very helpful, yeah, I'm just like I said, I'm enjoying this manga. I mean, I thought that was kind of odd, I guess, because I felt like if I read this in high school, it'd be like one of those series I was just like, this is the worst thing ever, but I dig it. It's again, it's etchy, but it's not super in your face. And I don't know if it's maybe because the art has an older style to it, but it definitely, because it definitely feels like one of those series that okay, this is an art style that has definitely been aped by how to draw manga books, that kind of thing. But something about the art just feels very nostalgic, and maybe because I feel since it's older, I'm more forgiving. I don't know, but yeah, unfortunately, because it's a work that inspired a lot of the tropes of this genre. Depending on how well versed you are in this genre, you might not find this series as enjoyable because it'll be something you've seen probably 100 times before. But maybe if you're fairly new and you've kind of stayed away from these type of manga, it could be something you might like if you keep an open mind about it, I guess. Again, I don't know. I think again the characters are enjoyable enough. It's a short read, 14 volumes, or again 6 omnibuses. I think it's gonna call it for the Love Hina episode. I don't know if I went in deeper than I wanted to about this or not deep enough, but I feel like I wish I read a little bit more, especially considering how much time has passed since the last episode. But I appreciate you guys for listening as always, and I hope you enjoyed my featured guest Daisy, my dog, who just loves to bark. She's sleeping, and I think, oh, she'll be quiet while I'm recording. I don't have to put her in another room. I really don't want to put her in another room. And then she goes and barks at the mailman or something. yeah, that's gonna call it for this episode. Next time, again, sticking with Shonen. Next episode after that, I think it's back to Shoujo? Question mark. Jose Shoujo. It's gonna be Sure Dure Children. I think the anime was Sure Zure Children, but anyways, Sure Dure Children, and that's written and illustrated by Wakabayashi Toshiya. I think this is another series, if I remember. Yes, so Mangamo actually has a huge chunk of this series. I think about half, maybe more than half. Yeah, so I wrote it down here. So Mangamo has 109 out of the 212 chapters of the series. So that means it goes about halfway into volume 7. So 7.5 volumes out of 12 volumes of the series are available on Mangamo. So that's how I'm going to be reading it. And I don't know how much I'll read. I think the format of this manga is a little different. I think it's one of those four coma ones. I can't remember. But I remember really loving the anime when I originally watched that when it aired. And God, it was just so good. It's like snippets of like these different characters' relationships and just like the different dynamics. Some of them are really innocent and cute. One's like, one character, like the girl character, is like she's very experienced and mature, and like she's kind of a handful. And this guy's kind of just like, he's more, he's less experienced, way more nervous around her. So it's just different, exploring different dynamics of these different couples and kind of just following them. Like they're already, I think it's like following them from the point of confession. Like they're already in a relationship, so that's kind of cool. Or there's like these people that are kind of teetering on a relationship. So yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed it, and there were some really good moments from that anime when I originally watched it. So I'm looking forward to the manga, and I'm looking forward to seeing these relationships explored. There's a lot of characters. From what I remember, there's a whole bunch of characters, and they're not necessarily tied to each other. You're just following all their individual stories. I think they might be part of the same school or something. But yeah, I'm looking forward to digging into that. And yeah, you can expect that next episode. That'll be episode what, 47. Man, I've been I had 47 episodes, huh? I'm almost at 50, and I really don't have anything special planned. I'm sorry, but I just saying that out loud, it's like, well, I'm close to 50 episodes. It's pretty cool. Despite my inconsistent release schedule, I'm still cranking these episodes out. So oh, and in the meantime, if you guys, again, if you're into Webtoon at all, I feel like I don't. I'm trying not to be annoying about this and plug it all the time, but I do have my Webtoon Journey podcast, which I promise I am not doing, doing it to a detriment of this podcast. The posting schedule for that is equally as bad. I gave myself more work, but and both podcasts are suffering because of it. But if you guys are interested in Webtoon at all, I just dropped an episode for that the other day on Not Even Bones. So it's like a thriller webtoon series if you guys want to check that out. And yeah, I usually don't, I try not to plug for stuff too often, but if you guys have any, you feel free to reach out to me if you have any comments on a series that I've done an episode on, or I announced Surizuru Children. If you have any experiences with that anime or that manga, feel free to write in. I have my contact information in the descriptions of each episode. Yeah, if you reach out to me, I'll read aloud on the podcast. I'll answer it aloud on the podcast, or at least, comment on it or whatever. If it's not a question, I'll just comment on it or read it out loud. But yeah, that just kind of makes the show better. Doesn't feel like I'm talking to myself all the time. Appreciate you guys, and yeah, tune in next episode. Thank you.